Hey, true believers, welcome to another episode of F This Movie, a very special episode of F This Movie, because we're talking about superhero movies. My name is Patrick Bromley, as always, and I am joined tonight by two very special guests, one even more special than the other. First, an F This Movie regular, Mike.
Hey, everybody.
Welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
And because we're talking about superhero movies, we had to bring in the big guns. And so joining the show for the first time is our friend Adam.
Hey there.
Who is, you guys can wrestle at the end of the show to see who is the bigger comic book nerd, okay?
I'll give it up right now. Adam is...
Adam wins?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm a big fan.
He is a huge nerd.
Okay. Well, welcome. But you guys are more into like DC, correct?
There's a kind of a saying like Marvel gets you into comics, DC makes you love comics.
What? And I've never heard that. You made that saying?
No, I have not.
You made it up.
I was a comic book store employee in Chicago that told me that, and he's so right. Like, I love DC. Like, I first loved Marvel, but now I love DC.
But DC is definitely geared toward older. Yeah. An older crowd, I would say.
Because all of their heroes are from the 1950s? Is that what you mean?
That's pretty much.
I am a comic book fan, not nearly as much as these two characters, but I was always more into Marvel. So maybe that's good. Maybe we're all well represented here.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. Marvel might have the better movies, I'm just going to say. I don't know. We'll see when we figure it out. They definitely have more of them.
Save it for the podcast.
This is the podcast. This is happening. As always, you can visit our website at fthismovie.blogspot.com, and you can email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com in case you're like, why didn't you guys put X-Men United or X-Men The Last Stand? I fucked it up already. If your name is Brett Ratner and you're like, you should have included X-Men The Last Stand. fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com.
Wait for it, Brett. I'll edit.
Yeah, okay.
Patrick, we should probably talk about one thing before we go on. That's the fact that I am eventually going to mess up and call Mike Buh at least once during this podcast.
Wow, okay. So we've made it over 50 shows before revealing the fact that Mike also goes by the name Buh. Like literally how it sounds, B-A, buh.
Yeah.
So, for the rest of the podcast, Adam, you will be Borf, and of course, will be
Meep
Burp.
Boop.
Yeah, Meep Boop, which is Polish. So, yeah, if you hear someone say buh, they're talking to Mike. They're not just, like, belching or having a stroke. Like, sometimes people call him buh.
Now, don't email and ask where the nickname came from. It's the worst story.
No, Mike loves to tell that story.
Yeah, right?
Where was I? Oh, I was just saying, like, blah, 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 Facebook, Twitter. Facebook.com/FThisMovie, Twitter.com/FThisMovie. Follow us. Suggest us to your friends. This 2011. It's 2011.
Right? It is.
That's going to be our year here at F This Movie. As soon as I figure out what year it is. Before we start talking about superhero movies, we're talking about the best and the worst superhero movies tonight. Specifically, we were going to do comic book movies, and then we narrowed it down. And the reason for that is because this summer there are a lot of superhero movies coming out, and I think what we're seeing is the ride up to the last wave. Like, next summer, we've got Spider-Man, Batman, and Superman. Am I correct?
You are correct.
Man of Steel comes out next year, too? Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be it. I think it's all downhill after that, because...
In quality or quantity?
Quality.
Okay.
I think we're going to get back to then, like, the Batman and Robin years, where it was like, the bubble will burst. Because we're being oversaturated bad right now, and we're getting a bunch... Oh, and the Avengers next year.
Oh, yes.
Which is
little
huge.
Movie called The
Right,
Avengers.
So everything kind of is leading up to next year. The end of the Batman trilogy, the relaunch of Superman again.
Relaunch of Spider-Man.
Right, the relaunch of Spider-Man and The Avengers. So these are like arguably the four biggest comic book movies, or at least properties, around. And after that, I really think it's going to be downhill. So this summer, we'll see Thor, Captain America, mm-hmm. the first Avenger, The Green Lantern, which Adam can't wait for. The Green Lantern is Adam's favorite hero. And as long as we're talking about it, since this is your first time on the podcast, it's important to let people know sort of where you stand cinematically. So I'll just let everyone know Adam's favorite movie is Lady Hawk.
told me you'd never tell anybody that.
What is your favorite movie for real? Do you have one?
Yeah. Say Anything.
Say Anything. All right. No, that's a decent response. Lady Hawk, close second then?
Yes.
Okay.
Followed by Hudson Hawk. Yes.
That's outstanding. Hawk. Nighthawks? Where do you stand on Nighthawks?
You know what? It used to be my top 10, but not anymore.
Completes the Hawk trilogy. So, Captain America, Thor, Green Lantern, X-Men, First Class. Am I missing one? That's four, just in the summer.
Superhero-wise, I don't think so. Cowboys and Aliens is a comic book movie, but not superhero.
Oh, right. So that was the distinction, that we were going to talk specifically about superhero movies and not all comic book movies. And then Mike was mad, because he was like, but I want to talk about History of Violence. And I was like, you can't. Is there a superhero in history? I mean, well, he does some heroic
stuff. I like the movie Constantine, and that was the one where I was like, oh, yeah, okay, we go superheroes because Constantine's not really a superhero.
I like the movie Constantine, too, and not many people do. You may get booed off this podcast.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm kidding. I mean, bud off this podcast. You're not a Constantine
fan? No, I am. I was about to say, is then he...
WTF.
Well, is he not a...
I don't think he's a superhero.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. Mike is on his list. Uh-oh.
No, it's fine. Keep on there. But I've never read Hellblazer either, and so that might be why I like Constantine, because a lot of people who read Hellblazer apparently are not fans.
And I could see that, too, because I'm not a big Hellblazer fan either. I kind of really liked... I like Constantine because I never read it before.
Right.
And
I had read it, and I still liked it.
Well, look at you. He kicks ass for the Lord. So, blah, 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 superheroes. But before we talk about superheroes, real quick, since we got a lot of ground to cover tonight, but I do want to throw out the question. What have you guys seen lately that is good, that is not Doctor Who? Because that's still going, F this movie audience.
I thought about that on the way over here. Every time
you come out, I'm watching Doctor Who.
I am watching, or the most recent thing I've watched, I've seen a million times, but I wanted to bring it up because I really want people to see it if they have not yet, and that is Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Oh, that movie's great.
I'm sitting with two romantic comedy fans, and I think you would both agree that it is one of the better romantic comedies we've had in quite some time.
Probably the best of the last 10 years, I would say.
Yep, it's mysteriously left off your romantic comedy podcast.
Yeah. No real reason. I mean, it was like next in, I think, but I just had other ones that I wanted to cover.
Didn't mean to call you out right now, but...
No, it's fine. Just whatever. When you do a romantic comedy podcast, you can make it number one.
So if you haven't seen it because you thought it looked like every other romantic comedy, I implore you to please seek it out. It's really funny. It's different than most in that I think, boy is with a girl... who he loses and spends a whole movie trying to get over. Meanwhile, the perfect girl's right in front of him. But what I loved about it, without giving too much away, is, eventually you find out that girl that he loses is not horrible, which is where I think most romantic comedies go. She's actually pretty sweet and not the monster that she's made out to be early in the movie. And you also find out that he fucked up. And he, right. Well, I mean... She did make efforts to keep things moving to try to repair their relationships, and he just didn't see it, or they just weren't meant to be together. And I love that more mature, I think, take that the movie takes, and
that it treats everybody like a real human being,
right?
And yeah,
and they say things real human beings say,
right,
for the most part. And Russell Brand's in it. It's just funny.
It's got Kunu in it.
Yeah, it's got Paul Rudd as Kunu.
Yeah, the only stuff I'm not crazy about is the Jonah Hill stuff. And it's fine, it's not offensive, but like it just feels tacked on, like he got his friend a vacation to Hawaii.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Could be. It worked
fine
for me.
Yeah, right, it's fine. But I just want to stay with those four people mostly,
No, I understand. Mila Kunis is adorable in the movie. Not that I didn't dislike her before the movie, but... she is, absolutely, but... I really fell in love with Mila Kunis in that movie. So if you haven't seen it, please seek out Forgetting Sarah Marshall. It's worth it.
Adam, how about yourself?
Well, I saw Sucker Punch.
Okay.
With Mike.
Yes.
Mike.
Oh, you guys saw Sucker Punch together.
We did. I think I liked it a little bit more than he did. But
you were not a fan?
I didn't dislike it.
Okay.
I know you just did a podcast on this, so that's if you haven't heard that, please go back and listen to it. I respect the things he tried to do. I thought it was more interesting than most movies I go out and see. It just didn't stick with me too much.
Okay. But you liked it.
For being an art person, it was so much fun to watch. Yeah. Like, just awesome. The thing that that's sticking with me that's making me not love it is I don't understand why he even had to include the burlesque house stuff. Like, it just seems to me like, why wouldn't you just, like, why did he have to go to three levels? Like, why couldn't you tell a story about a girl in an insane asylum and she goes away to this other place?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, why did we have to have that level in between?
I think there are reasons both narrative-wise and thematically that is the case, but we probably shouldn't get into it right now.
Yeah.
We could talk about it after the podcast, but yeah. It would be boring for anybody who already sat through a 90-minute podcast on Sucker Punch for us to continue to talk about it. But I mean, I agree with you that is certainly like, I don't know. But I think I can justify it, but I don't know how much of my affection for that movie is that kind of thing where, like, I keep having to justify things to myself, like, no, I like it, and I make up a reason why I like it. Or is that stuff all really there? I don't know.
I didn't dislike it, but I think I was more in the I didn't expect to come out sort of in the middle.
Okay.
I thought I would feel strongly one way or another. Right. And I didn't. But, I mean, I'm a fan of Zack Snyder's, and I don't, you know, unlike some people who came out and said it was terrible and it makes you rethink his previous movies, I'm not in that boat at all. I didn't think it was terrible, and I appreciated what he tried to do.
Yeah.
I was never, you know, necessarily bored, but it didn't really stick with me that much either.
Do you guys wish that they would have kept the musical numbers in?
In a way, I think that it would have made more sense for the burlesque house stuff.
Yeah.
Because it almost started becoming like that was the movie, was the burlesque house place.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And like that was the reality, whereas then it would have taken away some of the reality.
Right.
So I think it maybe would have made more sense.
And I don't know why if they cut it out for length or if they were really just like, no, it'll be too weird then. Like,
yeah, okay.
That was the fix. Last night I watched Hobo with a Shotgun on demand.
Okay.
It's available on demand, everyone. If you don't know what Hobo with a Shotgun is, when Grindhouse came out in 2007, they sponsored a contest to make your own fake Grindhouse trailer. And this guy, Jason Eisner, won with a trailer for a movie called Hobo with a Shotgun. And in some prints, I think in Canada, they ran that trailer as part of that middle section in the movie with the fake trailers. And then he made another short movie called Treevenge about a killer Christmas tree. And then somebody gave him the money to make Hobo with a Shotgun into a feature, and Rucker Hauer stars in it. I wish I could be way more excited about it. I mean, it's fine. Like, it's cool to look at because he does all this crazy stuff color-wise. If you've seen the trailer, you can kind of tell. It's insanely just violent and bloody. And the few reviews I read all mentioned it's like a trauma movie, and I was like, well, that's just people being ignorant. That's just shorthand for it's really violent and kind of campy. But it really is a lot like a trauma movie to the extent that like it centers around like an entire city the way that every trauma movie does. There's all these extras. They're all constantly bug-eyed and screaming. I mean, the whole thing is pitched at the level of like a trauma movie energy-wise. So I wish I could say like, hey, everybody should see Hobo with a Shotgun. I enjoyed it for what it was, but I would much rather watch, you know, Planet Terror again 10 times than watch Hobo with a Shotgun.
Now you said, though, like, movies that we liked, because I saw a movie that I didn't like.
Oh, yeah, I'll hear about that, too.
I saw Ong Bak 3.
Oh, okay. I haven't, I bailed after Ong Bak 1.
And you know what's odd is I saw Ong Bak 1, yeah. I didn't see 2.
But were you able to follow along in 3?
No. Oh. It's completely, like, you're like, what the fuck is going on in this movie?
Yeah.
Although I have a sneaking suspicion, had you seen 2, you'd probably still be the same
way. Yeah. I don't know. It's got great, it's an Asian, you know, movie with, you know, fighting, so it's awesome, you know.
Tony Jaa, right?
Yeah. Okay. And that part's great, but You know, in the action movie, you know, when the guy gets his ass kicked, and then he goes and recovers and trains again, and then goes back. The entire, like, first hour and a half of this movie, it feels like, is him recovering.
Awesome.
Like, it's, there's almost...
Outstanding.
Yeah, I mean, there's a little... And then there's, like, this weird thing with this king and this, like, mystical crow man who wants to be king, and there's good fights here and there, but for the most part you're just like, what is happening? I just don't
Did any elephants go missing?
No, but there is an elephant that
there's I remember an elephant. I don't remember anything about the elephant, but I remember Tony Jaa and an elephant.
I feel like he spends a movie looking for this. Yeah, like
they kidnap him. No, there's
See, I often confuse it with Larger Than Life, the Bill Murray movie.
Right. You're not alone. No.
There's like the part at the end where he kills like half of this little king's army with, he slingshots a giant sculpture using an elephant. It's really
he uses the elephant to slingshot and he kills half an army.
I'm glad
to know that he is okay after the events of Ong Bak 2, which I didn't see, but apparently it took a lot of recovery. Whatever happened to him in part 2 really messed him up. He's been on the mend for quite some time, so I'm glad to hear that he does recover and then fights again. Now, does he get messed up during the fight at the end of Ong Bak 3? Because then there's going to be a part 4 just where we see him.
No, but he
sitting he does,
he gets his ass kicked, and then he goes back in time, and
why wouldn't you lead with that? I don't understand. The slingshot was weird? Really?
It's just really, I don't know. But what was odd about it is, you could tell, like, is it Thailand where this...
Yes.
You could tell they really got the best filmmaker in the area, because, like, it's really well shot, and it's beautiful. Like, the cinematically, it's really beautiful to watch, but... Whew, it's brutal.
All right, I know. There's people that kind of swear by those movies, but I wasn't. I saw the first one; it was fine. I just haven't been. I haven't felt compelled to continue on.
No. Not to turn this into a Tony Jaa podcast.
No, I would like to.
The Protector has a great. That was his follow-up, I believe, to Ong Bak.
Yeah,
has a great fight scene. It's worth it for.
Are there any
this
elephants?
One extent. I don't think there's any.
Is elephants. There any time travel? Not interested.
There's a lot of recovery, though.
Oh, well. So you might. All right. I like to see that process. I like to see how resilient the human body can be. That's what I like in a movie. I thought he was, like, retiring from movies, and he was going to become, a monk or something.
I thought so.
Like a bulletproof monk. Am I wrong? Do I have that wrong? Anyway, so see Sucker Punch if you haven't, because it's going to be gone in a week. Don't see Ong Bak 3 until you see Ong Bak 2. Let's talk about superhero movies. So we're basically just going to kind of count down our favorite and least favorite, right?
Yes.
So we'll start with our favorites, because it's always good to start positive and end where you just shit on things.
Now we're going
to
go 5-4-3-2-1 or 1-2-3-4-5?
Well, 5-4-3-2-1, but I have to say right now, I didn't really rank mine. I'll kind of try and do it as well.
I didn't either.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
I just got... One. No, you, that's great. No, I'm glad to hear that. I just kind of picked... five. So why don't you go first, Adam, with your number five favorite superhero movie of all time?
Now, I went with comics that I've read. Okay. Because if I hadn't read the comic, my number five was Rocketeer.
Okay.
But I never really read the comic. I just saw the movie when it came out. So that's all I'm going to say about that. Okay. But ones that I've actually read, my number five is Iron Man.
Okay.
We're going to have the same list.
Are you serious?
It's going to be close.
I'm trying to make them different. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, it's just like the it's one of those movies where when I found out that Robert Downey Jr. was playing Tony Stark, I was like, that's awesome.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Him and Batman are the two characters where their alter egos are almost more interesting than the character.
Definitely true of Iron Man, yeah.
Yeah, and the movie reflects that. When you really go back and watch that movie, there's really not a lot of action in it.
No.
And it's so interesting, and I didn't even notice it. So I love that, you know, like the stuff with him and Pepper Potts.
Yeah.
Like, they totally got that relationship down. It's just a really great movie.
It's good. It's, like, super entertaining. And it, when they said they were making an Iron Man movie, I was kind of skeptical because I just didn't see a lot of people knowing who Iron Man was and wanting to go see that movie, but Robert Downey Jr. brought in so many people and turned a lot of people on that could have cared less about Iron Man or didn't even know it was a comic book, you know? Mm-hmm. I love Iron Man, and I like all the stuff with Tony Stark, like you said, even better than the Iron Man stuff, because to me, Iron Man suffers from the same problem as the first Spider-Man, which is like, when he actually kind of becomes the superhero, it's way less interesting, because then it's just like generic obligatory fight scene against bad guy. You know?
The first half of Spider-Man is wonderful. Yeah. It's like, that's the movie I want for its entirety.
Yeah. And Iron Man, like 2/3 mm-hmm. is that. And then it's really just when you get to, but I mean, the fight scene at the end is fine and it's relatively short and whatever, but yeah, Iron Man is awesome. Mike, how about you?
I'm going to go with Batman, Tim Burton's Batman, but hear me out.
Interesting.
Wait, here's why, and this subject gets brought up all the time on this podcast. I love Prince. This gets brought up all the time on this podcast, but I cannot watch that movie as anyone other than 11-year-old Mike.
Okay.
That movie, when I was a kid, was everything to me, and I still... Well, now I watch it and I see how flawed that movie actually is and how it's not the great movie that I thought it was when I was little. I still get so much enjoyment out of it. I'm a big, big fan of Michael Keaton. And while Jack Nicholson's performance is probably what gets a little harder to watch each time around, it's still a ton of fun. I still, I love the Batmobile. I love the designs. It does not hold up. And had I not seen it when I was a little kid, it would not make my list, but it's still, for me, brings me a ton of joy. As a little kid, I loved movies and I loved superheroes and I loved the original Superman, but I don't think I ever had that mix like I did. I hadn't experienced that mix like I did with Batman, like two of my favorite worlds just exploding, and it was the greatest experience for me, so...
That defined, like, the first half of my life, the release of Batman, honestly. And you have to give it tons of credit, like, because, I mean, not that there was a flood of comic book movies afterwards, but it was one of the first, to show that they could be successful, that you could kind of treat it seriously and not like the Batman TV show or Lois and Clark or whatever else was going on at the time. Like, no, there's a way to do this that's kind of for adults. And, unfortunately, there were slightly diminishing returns. Although a lot of people swear Batman Returns is even better.
I'm not one of those people. And I always like Batman Returns.
There's things to like in it.
But I don't agree with that.
I have not seen... I've seen the original the Tim Burton Batman a lot.
Yeah.
I really think I've seen Batman Returns, like, twice.
Oh, really?
And I haven't seen it in years.
Yeah.
So
it's been a while for me, too.
There's definitely things to like about it, but... Yeah, I mean, I totally get that choice. I just, the last few times I've watched it, I mean, in particular, after the release of, like, The Dark Knight, it's like, I can't ever go back to this.
Right.
I don't, what? It's going back to the Stone Ages. All right, mine probably could have been Iron Man, but I'm going to go with a slightly more controversial choice, and that is Kick-Ass.
Okay, I didn't know what to do about Kick-Ass, but I'm glad you brought it up.
Yeah.
I never read the comic, so I don't really know that much about it, but the movie came out, I think, last year, and I really loved it, and I feel like so many people kind of missed the boat, and that's probably not fair to say, like, just because you didn't like Kick-Ass, I'm not going to be the guy who's like, you didn't get it, but I think people really wrote it off as being sort of one level, and not really acknowledging, A, that it is satirical. I know some people feel like, everyone's calling it satire, but what is it satirizing? But it is. I mean, there's a lot of things. Kick-Ass is the kind of movie that could have only been made, though, within the last few years, after sort of the glut of superhero movies, because otherwise, did you guys ever see Mystery Men?
Yes.
I think that movie's really great.
I love it.
But it came out way too early. No one knew what it was making fun of. People just couldn't get into that movie because they hadn't seen 20 comic book movies. And Kick-Ass, they have now, so they kind of know what it's making fun of. What I like about Kick-Ass, aside from just that it's really entertaining and it's a lot of fun, that it's very subversive and that it treats violence As much as the violence is like cartoonish and over the top, I think there are moments that treat violence as something real and something horrible and something painful. I mean, that scene very early on when he first puts on the costume, the first thing that happens to him is he gets stabbed in the stomach. Like, yeah, dipshit, yep. That's what happens when you go out to be a superhero. And I genuinely think that the relationship between Nicolas Cage and his daughter is moving, and his last scene in the movie I think is very moving, and I think it's amazing that they pulled that off, that in a movie that's sort of this stylized and cartoonish and sort of bratty and all these things that people wrote it off as being, I think there's real emotion in it. And I think that's a hard thing to pull off.
I completely agree. In that scene specifically, I find amazing because I think it's absolutely moving and it gets me every time. But yeah, it's still, at the same time, I'm like, I laugh to myself that this is also... I can't, it's crazy Nicolas Cage,
right?
Like yelling the shit he's yelling, but it completely works.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of that movie, but I think a lot of people had a hard time wrapping their heads around the fact that there's moments of real gritty violence and then this over the top.
Right. They didn't like to be pulled out of the cartoon.
Right.
Yeah. I think you're right.
By the way, I read Kick-Ass.
Yeah.
They do a real good job.
Really?
Like, that's one of the, like, rare occasions where they stay pretty true to the comic in a lot of senses.
Well, I believe they worked almost side by side, correct?
Yeah, like, yeah.
They were very much part of the process from the beginning.
But... And was that one of the movies that, like, the movie was in production before the comic book ended? Correct. Or am I confusing that with Scott Pilgrim?
I think both.
Okay. Okay, Adam, what is next for you, sir?
I think I have this lower on my list than you guys do.
Okay.
I have number four, The Dark Knight.
Okay.
I love that movie.
Yeah.
I think everybody always talks, you know, about Heath Ledger in that movie. Like, I remember when I came, you have to see Heath Ledger in it. But
That's how I was with the movie Casanova.
Oh, okay.
You guys got to see Ledger.
But he... what was so great about that performance is us as comic book fans thought we knew Joker. Like, we thought we got him down. You know, I've read Alan Moore's stuff. I've read everybody's stuff, you know, about the Joker, and I think I know him. And here is these two people who had nothing to do with comics who came out with this completely new vision of the Joker that I didn't see coming,
mm-hmm.
which was awesome to me.
And I think in a lot of ways, it is kind of now the definitive portrayal of the... Like, I think it would be hard for somebody else to come in and try and do...
I think it's almost impossible. Yeah. I think you'd have to do something completely different compete with that performance at all. Yeah. Like, I don't think you could try to do that.
You mean, like, make him a black guy? Or what do you, I don't know what you mean. Will Smith?
Yes. With Jaden somewhere in there.
Ooh, Jaden's
there. I don't care where.
Yeah, I was against them doing the Joker because we'd already seen it. I just thought it was obvious. I was against Heath Ledger because I was like, he's too young, blah, blah. And I was just completely wrong on both counts. Mm-hmm. Why is it lower on your list, would you say?
There are some little side storylines that, like, I hate the storyline in the movie where, you know, you've got the guy who's working for the company and he thinks he knows who Batman really is and he's going to reveal that. And I understand it all ties in a way, but, like, to me, I just thought there were so many more. Every time that part of the movie comes on, I'm like, I don't care about this.
It's really only, like, two scenes, though, isn't it?
It is, but they try and I think that that's where it starts becoming a problem for me is somebody... is about to reveal who Batman is.
Mm-hmm.
And you're only, like, it's like they kind of stuck it in there.
Right, but I mean, I also felt like they kind of addressed it with Morgan Freeman's response to him, which is just, this guy can do this, this, and this, and you want to blackmail him? Like, think about what's going to happen to you. I'm not arguing with you that I think Dark Knight is really sort of overstuffed. There's almost too much going on. But I'm a hypocrite because at the same time, one of the things that I like about Dark Knight and Batman Begins is that they don't reduce Batman's fight, as it were, to just one guy. That he's always being attacked by all these different forces at all times.
Right.
And Batman Begins really did that with, you know, the Scarecrow and Ra's al Ghul and the mob, and it's all these different things coming at him at once. And this is just a different kind of attack that he also has to worry about protecting his identity. So that doesn't bother me as much, but I do have problems with The Dark Knight as well.
And to hear those problems, listen to the Dark Knight podcast. That's right. With Alex.
That's right. Yes, thank you.
Dark Knight, I might as well get it out of the way now, is my number, would be my number one.
That okay.
Is, that, that is that's my...
your favorite of all time.
Yes, it is my favorite, and I don't disagree with anything either one of you have said. Any criticisms, I get it, but it was so exhilarating for me.
Yeah.
Because you're a big Batman fan. Like, I say he's your favorite?
He and Hulk.
Yeah.
Are my favorite. And I, like you guys, not to repeat what you said, but when I heard Heath Ledger was cast as a Joker, I was like, oh, are you kidding me? And then I think all it took was, I don't know if it was Ain't It Cool News or what, had a screenshot of Heath Ledger in the makeup.
Yeah.
And that's all I needed. Right away I was like, oh, this is already different than what right. I had in my head.
Right.
And then, you know, the teaser, the Why So Serious teaser poster where he's right. writing that in blood, was just, it's what I wanted to see in a Batman movie. And I was unaware that it's what I wanted to see in a Batman movie, that portrayal of the Joker. Like, I wanted to shy away from talking about Heath Ledger because I think that's what everybody does. But there's a reason why everybody does, because that performance is great. And that's what just sticks in my brain and will always stick in my brain. That mm-hmm. version of the Joker is the Joker that I'm the most interested in. I want to see... it was so interesting to me to see Batman against someone who was crazy, who didn't care about money, didn't care about anything. He just wanted to cause destruction. And at the end of the day, Batman sort of loses.
Right.
He doesn't win at the end of that movie.
Oh, yeah. There's so many ways that he loses in that movie, which makes it so awesome.
Right. There people close to him die.
Like,
In that movie. It's The Empire Strikes Back of that trilogy, I think.
Yeah, it definitely is. And what I like about it, and what I like about Batman Begins, but way more so in The Dark Knight, is that it treats it, so it grounds it so much in reality.
It's a world I recognize.
Except for the fact that he's wearing, like, a mask and a cape. Everything about that movie is like mm-hmm. a Michael Mann crime film. It's just, you know, that he's wearing this costume. But otherwise, everything about it is totally believable.
Right, absolutely. And I maybe this is in my own head, I'm justifying it in my own head, but I feel like Bruce Wayne comes across as not as sort of crazy himself. Like, he's not totally there. So the fact that he dresses up like a bat isn't completely out of the realm of possibility.
He thinks,
like,
Maggie Gyllenhaal is hot. So, I mean, obviously there's something wrong with him.
that would be my favorite.
That probably would be like my number two or three, and there's a specific reason why I would distinguish between that and my number one, which we'll get to. But I worry about the third movie because it's hard to top. I mean, it really is going to be really
absolutely
difficult to top. If for no other reason, I mean, it's a great movie kind of all around, but if for no other reason than because of Heath Ledger. I mean, if you just had that hurdle, the odds would be stacked against you because you have to come up with, and it sounds like they're throwing six villains in to compensate for one.
Which is never good.
Right. When has that ever worked? Ever.
Right. Never.
No. It ruined the original Batman series. It ruined Spider-Man. I mean, it's like, it's a terrible idea. But we have to put our confidence in Christopher Nolan, right?
Absolutely, and I'm fascinated with the idea that this is going to wrap up, a Batman story. Yes, it's wrapping up Christopher Nolan's trilogy, but I think
they're going to keep going because make money. Well,
they're already talking.
Yeah, they're already talking about it, but they're talking about it as a reboot. So, because
awesome, I just want to see his origin again.
but I think Christopher Nolan plans on. Not just ending Christopher Nolan's story, but ending Batman's story. You know what I mean?
Really?
Yeah. That's what I believe.
Wow.
If this is wrong, please go back and edit this out. But I really think, like, he wants to tell Batman's story in three movies.
Okay.
And it would sort of end his story.
That's cool.
I
hate the title, but everything else I'm down for right now. But really? The Dark Knight Rises? Really?
No.
You're just going to add a word to your last title? Terrible.
Okay.
Terrible.
We'll agree to disagree.
Dark Knight was pretty much, could have been on mine too, so I'll jump to the original Richard Donner Superman. okay. would be on the list, because for a lot of the reasons we said about the original Batman is that it takes everything very seriously. It's still a lot. It's like a ton of fun. Gene Hackman is not the best Lex Luthor because he doesn't really ever seem dangerous.
He's not evil enough.
Right. Yeah. There's no real threat in Superman, you know, but it doesn't matter because the movie's a ton of fun. It has such an epic scope, particularly for the late 70s. I like that Metropolis feels like a real city with real people that live in it. It's a little too much like... I could have stood for it to be actually a little more stylized because it just feels like an office in the 70s, you know? Yeah. But with people smoking, it's like, oh, this is weird. But what I really like is that it acknowledges all the... like space aspects of Superman, yeah. because that doesn't get dealt with a lot of times, you know, that like, oh, he's an alien. We start in outer space on another planet. And I like that it treats all that kind of seriously. I mean, just seeing Marlon Brando in that part, like, oh, they're really trying to do something special and new here. And it's great. A lot of people like Superman 2 better. I understand that because again, the villains are so much better. But to me, Superman 2, and maybe Richard Donner's Superman 2 would have been different, but what Richard Lester, right? Mm-hmm. What he did, but he kind of turned it a little too jokey, I think. There's humor in that movie that bothers me. I still like Superman 2, but I still the first one is the best for me.
That was actually my number 2 movie.
Okay.
I love that movie.
Yeah.
Like, I just watched it again. It was on some cable network yesterday, 2 days ago. It was awesome. But with, like, the space stuff, I love, like, the contrast in it of, you know, you go to Krypton, and you could not, I don't think you can imagine a colder, like, duller place than Krypton.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you've got these two parents that, like, genuinely care about their kid, and then he's sent here to Kansas, mm-hmm. and it's just, like... They captured everything I love about it. And, like, visually, they captured everything I love about Superman. That movie is so good. Yeah. I love it.
And I don't know that it works as well if Christopher Reeve isn't Superman. He is so great.
Yeah.
As Supes. And maybe the longest opening credits ever?
Oh my God. I guarantee it is the longest ever.
That's crazy.
Oh, my God.
It's crazy. But, yeah, they tell an origin story, like, in a... I don't know. They don't spend like a ton of time on the origin story, even though the stuff on Krypton takes a long time. But then once he's on Earth, they're not going on and on and on. I don't know. Superman, obviously, as we've seen, is a hard thing to get right. And I think that's the only movie that's ever gotten it right. I'm not the world's biggest fan of the Bryan Singer.
Neither am I.
Superman.
Same here.
Well, Superman himself as a character is a really hard one to get right. And until recently, I've been collecting the comic now for 15 years.
Yeah.
And until recently, I just got it because it was Superman. But nobody got it right because he's so hard to write. He's the most powerful being on the planet.
Right, so it's hard to make that interesting.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of people just reduce him to, no, he's super strong and he always does the right thing. Like, he's flawless and infallible. And,
but that's recently and that's what so they're doing. Yeah.
Right, because that's... boring, but at the same time, you don't necessarily want to, like, no, let's explore the dark, tortured Superman, which obviously is what Tim Burton was going to do with Nicolas Cage, which I was excited about.
I was very excited about it.
I was like, well, Nicolas Cage is going to play him like an alien. That's great. And it didn't happen, obviously. But, I mean, Brandon Routh did a fine job, but it was just... Mm-hmm. My problem with Superman Returns, I have many problems. It asked a bunch of questions that it had no interest in answering. And I won't get into that too much, but it presents this idea of the world has moved on and doesn't need Superman anymore. And then he comes back, but then it never really addresses what any of that means to anyone. It's just like, oh, now he's back. Okay, let's move on and let's...
And then you find out, oh, well, they really did need him because otherwise all these people on this plane would have died.
But it even gets that wrong. I mean, that needed to be his first appearance in the movie. And it isn't. His first appearance is like him laying in a cornfield, right?
Right.
I haven't seen it like since I... saw it. I only saw it the one time on like opening day, but I haven't been able to watch it since. But if that's his first appearance in the movie, then at least we're like, holy cow, Superman's back. Look at this. We're saved. But it's not.
What a great opening sequence that would be. Because to me, that movie, Superman Returns is really boring.
It is.
It's really
boring. It only gets more boring the longer it goes on.
Yeah, you're just like, oh my God, will something happen? You've got a guy who can shoot lasers out of his eyes and fly, and I'm bored out of my mind watching this movie.
They tried a little bit to deal with that aspect of, like, that he feels different from everyone else, you know, which I respect, but it didn't work. So where are we at? Well, you technically talked about Superman.
We were at number four.
I don't know.
Yeah, okay. I got nothing. I was going to go Superman, but no. So I will now go with The Incredible Hulk, 2008.
The Louis Leterrier version?
Yes.
Okay. I did not see that coming.
Really?
No. I know you like the Hulk, but I did not see that.
I don't know that I'm saying if somebody is listening to this wanting to make a list of the five best comic book movies, don't listen to my list. I guess I picked my five favorite, which might be a different list. What I appreciated, and I'm a big Incredible Hulk fan, and I think maybe this movie proves that Hulk can never make a great movie. I feel like maybe he's too hard, or maybe I'm too tough to please, because I think, Adam, how you were saying earlier, that you think Bruce Wayne and Tony Stark may be more interesting than, you know, their superhero, but I think Bruce Banner is more interesting than the Hulk, and I feel like
The Hulk is a boring character. Like,
he runs around and smashes stuff
in a movie. Bruce Banner, great character.
Correct, and right, and but in I think that's where I'm going, because in the comic book, when written correctly, Hulk is maybe just as interesting as Bruce Banner,
like when he's a Vegas mob enforcer.
Well,
Joe Fix It, was that his name?
Yes, it was.
Nice, look at me.
Wow, I'm so impressed you know that, Patrick.
Yeah, take that, everyone.
I always appreciated that Bruce Banner was completely tortured by the fact that he was a Hulk, and he turned into this monster that he couldn't control and caused all this destruction and fear in people. And then when he was a Hulk, he hated Bruce Banner because, you know, Bruce Banner tried to control him. He just wanted to be left alone. And I always found that so interesting, and always found the Hulk almost as interesting as Bruce Banner. And I find that the movies maybe just can't translate that.
Do you think the problem is that they don't want to, like, write, because Hulk is essentially just like a CGI special effect that is there for the action sequences, that they don't want to write him with, like, thoughts and feelings?
Right, and who else besides me maybe wants to see that? I do understand that. But The Incredible Hulk, I think, maybe gets as close as you could possibly get to being a good Hulk movie. I think the Ed Norton stuff as Bruce Banner is really interesting. I love the stuff in the beginning where he's practicing meditating.
Awesome.
Like, doing everything he can in his power to keep the Hulk side inside of him.
And I love the part in the movie, because, like, it's one of those things that I never thought about, when him and Liv Tyler are starting to, like, get hot and heavy, and he has to stop. Like, oh my God, Bruce Banner can't have sex.
Right.
Like, I feel so bad for him.
Yeah,
like,
the Hulk fucks like a champ. Yeah, so it's fine. It all evens out.
Yeah.
So as an Incredible Hulk fan, I feel like that's probably the best version I'm ever going to get. And I thought it was a lot of fun. And I thought it was a good movie. I don't think it's great. But if I had, you know, if I had to grab five movies, superhero movies to watch, I think that would be one of them I'd grab. Because I love the characters. And I think they made a valiant effort to get it right. Or at least what's right in my mind.
I like it, and I totally agree with you that it's probably as good of a Hulk movie as we'll get. While it's on, I think it's, like, super entertaining. I like Ed Norton a lot in the part. I actually like Liv Tyler a lot more than Jennifer Connelly in the original.
I could not agree more.
Yeah.
I think Liv Tyler is really good.
Yeah. Because she's, like, warm, and that's something that Jennifer Connelly will never be, and something Liv Tyler can almost only be.
Yes.
My problem is, I don't think they quite nailed, like, a villain. Again, the villain always seems sort of like an afterthought. Just like, well, he's got to fight someone, so let's make it this, you know.
I wanted to get into villains, too. I didn't know when to, and maybe this is a good point. I think they picked Abomination as Hulk's villain, and that's one of his better villains. But I think Hulk maybe suffers from what a lot of other superhero movies suffer from or can suffer from. And I'd like your opinions on it. Do you think, if you're not Batman and you're not Superman, are you, or I'm sorry, if you're not Batman and you're not Spider-Man, are you limited as far as your movie franchise in how far you can go with said franchise by your rogues gallery?
Oh, yeah.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. Absolutely.
And I think that, so I mean, you, Superman, who is a completely so iconic, everybody knows him, but by Superman 4, he's fighting Nuclear Man,
right.
you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, because people really only know Lex Luthor. Yeah.
Right.
And Abomination is certainly Hulk's most well-known villain.
Yeah, and he's Hulk-like. And
right, he's a physical match.
Right. And then the movie also gave you the army, which is the other thing that he's...
Right.
His other big...
Well,
and that stuff was more interesting than
yeah.
him versus Abomination.
Right.
You know? The other thing that I think that you... There's also a big difference between villains that translate really well on comic books... And then once you put them in a movie, I mm-hmm. just don't know if they're any good. One for me, Juggernaut in X-Men. Love Juggernaut. In the pages of X-Men, he is like huge, like this like awesome, awesome character. There's no way you can successfully right. really translate him onto a screen and yeah, make right. him any interest. Like,
well, and that's what I'm interested in. And I have every faith in Christopher Nolan, but he's bringing Bane into the new one.
Right. Yeah.
And that, you know, the version we saw in, is that Batman and Robin or Batman Forever?
Batman and Robin.
Batman and Robin.
yeah, you know, unfortunately it ends up being like fan service at a certain point where they're like, well, yeah. the fans want to see this guy in a movie. And so they stick Juggernaut on or they stick Venom in, you know, Venom is never going to work in a movie. Venom barely works in a comic book, but like, it's going to be terrible in a movie.
Right.
And let's give him Topher Grace's voice.
Oh, well, then it's
that,
fine.
That would yeah. work. Yeah. yeah.
They should have a scene where Venom, like, smokes pot in the garage.
There you go.
Or just goes around.
Red shows up.
yeah, so I like Hulk when it's on, but then I kind of, like, forget it when it's over.
Yeah.
You know?
I get that.
But I definitely like it. And I wish we could see the Edward Norton cut of the movie.
Yeah.
Because supposedly it goes way more into the Bruce Banner stuff and the psychological stuff. And it's like, that's the good stuff,
it
you
is,
know?
Yeah.
And if that is punctuated by cool action scenes, great.
Right.
Because it just feels kind of like a minor movie otherwise. I certainly prefer it to the Ang Lee Hulk, although lots of people swear otherwise. I almost feel, and this isn't fair again, I just totally write off the opinions of others. but like I have my own podcast.
What do you do about it?
Because a lot of people are like, no, the Hulk, you know, Ang Lee Hulk is brilliant. It's so psychological. And it's like, I almost feel like you want to be that guy to take that position. And I know lots of people really are that guy and that's fine. But other people, I feel like, no, you're trying to be different. Mm-hmm. Because I'm sorry, he fights a Nick Nolte bubble at the end of that movie.
That's the worst.
Awful.
Right. And the three-headed or the two-headed dog or whatever. I mean, there's stuff in that movie that is good and works, and I could see what he's going for, but I just feel like he fails. It's an
right.
interesting failure, but a failure nonetheless.
I was going to say, I think Ang Lee maybe was trying to make the movie that people claim it is, but
yeah.
I don't think he succeeds.
That movie suffers from, I think, a lot of the same things that Superman Returns did, is like, I want to see an interesting movie, okay,
mm-hmm.
like Iron Man, but I want, there's a part of me, the comic book fan, the action movie fan, that wants to see
right.
Hulk smash, and
right.
I saw too much Hulk look at Flower.
Right,
and it's
it was,
like,
the
I,
conflict
yeah.
was entirely, like, psychological and existential, and he decided, oh, I don't want fight scenes, so he swings a tank, and that's in all the trailers, and we get excited, but, like, that's pretty much it for the movie,
mm-hmm.
and Incredible Hulk certainly makes up for that with a lot of cool action stuff.
Right.
My next pick, I think I've already said three, right? So I'm down to two. Watchmen.
Awesome.
Love it.
Yep.
What else can I say? I think it's great. I think Zack Snyder was tasked with sort of an impossible thing, but I think he did a terrific job. I think he's incredibly faithful to the comic book, but again, faithfulness does not a good movie make. I think he made a good movie that exists apart from the comic. And I think he's tackling some different things. As much as, you know, Alan Moore always said Watchmen was an unfilmable book because it's so much about being a comic book, the way it's structured and laid out.
I totally agree with that.
Right.
Bit, yeah.
The same way that Watchmen the comic is about being a comic, I think Watchmen the superhero movie is about being a superhero movie. And that was evident even in the first trailer that used the music from Batman and Robin. And, like, Ozymandias looks like a fucking Schumacher hero, you know? Yeah. Like, there's definite things about... The scene I always pointed to, and it's a scene that people fucking laugh at, is the sex scene, the Leonard Cohen sex scene between Malin Ackerman and Patrick Wilson. Because there's this long shot going up her boot.
Yeah.
Like, you cannot see that scene and tell me it's anything other than, like, this is about superheroes fucking, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
they dress up as superheroes, and right. they also have sex.
Exactly. And I just think it's a great, really underrated movie, and I hope it's looked on more favorably in years to come, because I think it's really, really good. And
I'm sorry.
It would be, like, it's between that and Dark Knight, sort of, for my number two spot.
Okay, that is my number two, okay. And I couldn't agree more that it's horribly underrated, and I get really aggravated because I feel like, you know, fanboys who've been screaming for years that that book cannot be made into a movie. Right. Well, they were given that book made into a movie and made well into a movie, and they piss on it. I don't understand why why people aren't still selling Watchmen posters at cons, and it drives me crazy. I feel like they were given. They were given a gift. He got it. He figured it out. Zack Snyder made Watchmen a movie, made it a very good movie.
Changed the ending.
Yeah, right.
Where's the squid?
Right.
Squid doesn't work in a movie.
Yeah, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. Right. At all.
Exactly.
At all.
I love that he changed that, and I know you'll probably get one or two, you know, what? Oh, dude. But, like, I when I saw it, I didn't know he was going to change the end of it.
Yeah.
And I was like, I get it. Yeah. I understand why he did, because the squid won't work.
Right. And the ending he picked, you know, made sense, like, for what that movie was about. I mean, I won't say what it is, but, like, it sort of ties things together in a way that the comic didn't. Again, because the comic was doing something different. But
and as far as Alan Moore goes, that guy hates everything.
Well, right.
He's the most cynical. He's a genius when it comes to comics. But God, he just needs to shut up.
I know what some people had a problem with was they wanted X-Men, not a, you know, deconstruction of a...
Right. Listen, Watchmen probably isn't going to appeal to a lot of people outside of the comic space, but it's fascinating that even the comic space rejects it.
Right, yeah. That's what I was getting at. Like, I cannot wrap my head around why I feel like the three of us are the only three that I'm friends with, and I'm friends with a lot of nerds that seem to really respond to that movie. Because I thought we'd all be, you know, singing in the streets together, but no.
It's great. I mean there are certainly flaws. I don't particularly like Matthew Good's performance. It breaks my heart because once upon a time that was maybe going to be Tom Cruise, and like. Man, would that have been perfect casting.
That would have.
So good, and I'm so sad that it wasn't. People shit on Malin Ackerman's performance, and okay, is she the best actress? No, but I think she does the part fine, because that's, the part is just kind of like...
She's brain, like, she's not
whiny
supposed to
and
be
wishy-washy, right. She's not like a really strong character, you know. Certain things they maybe didn't do, the reveal at the end for her character... doesn't quite work in the movie the way it does in the book. I mean, there are certainly those aspects, but again, I think the movie is deconstructing superhero movies more so than comic books.
Right.
I love that movie.
I do too. I'm with you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
My next one is X2.
Okay. Yeah.
X-Men 2.
That was like my next in, probably.
Yeah. X-Men 1 was good. I saw it. It was like, all right, X-Men 2... is really good.
Yeah. I think, like, X-Men 1 had to get a lot of the origin stuff out of the way, like establish those characters.
The same way that Superman and Batman are sort of watershed comic book movies, so is the original X-Men, and people don't necessarily acknowledge that. But again, you're talking about a drought from 89 to 2000, I think X-Men came out in 2000, of nobody getting a comic book movie right, really. And then X-Men comes along, and again, it's like, oh, there's a way to treat this stuff seriously. And its success has led to basically every other comic book movie that came after that, because then they started to greenlight them like crazy when that movie was a big hit.
And X-Men, the first X-Men, I have problems with some of the, like, I hate some of the characters in it. Like, I just don't like it. X-Men 2, like, I always bring up that there's two scenes that I'll pop in that disc and just watch two scenes. One where they
come. That makes
in,
me crazy. Well, don't well, tell know, me that. I know. You need to watch, you not
watch the whole movie. But, like, I'll just get a hankering and be like, oh, that's the part I want to see. And the part where Logan is kind of babysitting. And well, number one, the opening scene is unreal. Like, where goes into the president at Nightcrawler.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I could not remember what the opening scene was.
Unreal.
Like, Danger Room? Oh, yeah. That's X3. Sorry. Yeah.
That one's awesome. Then the second, I'm sorry, there's three scenes. So that one, then the second one is when Logan's babysitting and they come and invade.
That's my favorite scene in that movie.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
And then the third one, I love when Pyro loses it.
Mm-hmm.
And just goes off on the the cops and everything. Mm-hmm. It's like you know, I'm sick of being shit on.
Right.
Watch what I can do.
Right.
And I love those three action sequences are just incredible.
And admit it, because I was with you and our geeky friends at the end of the movie when you see the shadow of the Phoenix.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And then, of course, that is X-Men The Last Stand's greatest downfall is that it fails to capitalize on the promise of X-Men 2 because it sets up something great and does not deliver. But I will say this in defense of X-Men The Last Stand, which I'll just call X-Men 3. There's a lot of problems with that movie. Like, a lot. But it has a lot of what you're talking about in X-Men 2 because the first two movies don't have a ton of action, especially the second one. And it's great, but it's a lot of dialogue and character, which we as comic book fans love, because we're like, look, they're treating them like characters and not just cartoons, and that's great. But we rarely, the scenes you're talking about are where we get to see them be fucking X-Men. Like, that's that attack on the school that you're talking about when he's babysitting is like, they're being X-Men for the first time in almost two movies, where Logan is stabbing people in the chest, and he's turning into Colossus, and it's like, it's great, but it's so short-lived.
Yeah.
And I'll say this for X-Men 3, by the time you get to X-Men 3, like, the end of that movie, they're throwing cars and shooting fire and big, big, epic fight scenes. And I'm not saying it's all great, but it's like, oh, this is like when you read an issue of X-Men that's particularly action-packed, like, that's what this is, finally. It's too bad that the rest of the movie falls short. I wish it had sort of the weight of X-Men 2 with the action of X-Men 3. That's a perfect X-Men movie, but, you know.
Even some of the action, though, in X-Men 3, I think the execution is poor. Or maybe it's just visually. It felt to me, it always looked to me like they were on the back lot of...
Yeah, no, that's true. And they were insanely rushed on that movie.
Yeah, you know? They just...
And I don't hate X-Men 3 as much as some of my other...
I don't know.
I think that...
It's bad, though.
It's not good. I will say it's not good. And a lot of people have issue with, they kill Professor Ox off and everything like that. But it's like...
Spoiler.
but like, you know what? I like that they went in their own direction with it.
Right.
Like, they stayed true, but they were like, we're going to make this a trilogy. We're going to make three movies, and that's it. And
until they make a fourth movie.
Wow.
But it's a reboot prequel. Sorry.
Yeah.
My feeling, after I saw X-Men 3, I'm sorry to interrupt, but after I saw X-Men 3, I was like, you know what would make this movie better? If they made a fourth X-Men movie that had to deal with all of the changes in the third one, the characters that were killed off and all of the changes within X-Men, if you make a fourth movie that now has to deal with that...
Which is the comic book.
Right.
Like,
it kind of pays...
Constantly changing its roster.
It pays those things off, and obviously they aren't going to, which is fine, but...
Right. You know, but that would be interesting. With, you know,
but yeah,
Professor X and...
Right, because now you have to make those things work and sort of own them. Cyclops is, you know, and people are cured, and Cyclops is out of the picture, and Professor X is out of the picture, although not really, right, because he talks to Moira after the credits. Boring!
X2 is... There's little things in that one that I love, like the Mystique. If you read, like, the Chris Claremont X-Men of, you know, the 80s and, you know, part of the 70s, I think... part of the 70s, but like, what I love about that one is, like, all of a sudden there'll be like a three panel thing where, hey, this is what Mystique's doing right now, like, she's infiltrated the White House and this is where she's at, or she's in SHIELD, and like, I love the aspect of, like, Mystique in that one where you just never really know who she is. Like, I love that part.
Well, and her relationship with Magneto in the second one is so cool. I love the way those two play off each other. And again, that's part of the problem with the third one is that it kind of shits all over that. But their relationship in the second movie is really interesting. And yeah, if Dark Knight is the Empire Strikes Back of Batman movies, obviously X-Men 2 is the Wrath of Khan of X-Men movies. It's so similar in so many ways.
What were your thoughts when you... were you aware of who Hugh Jackman was before X-Men?
Nobody was.
Okay. I didn't know if that was...
We were in a comic book store with a bunch of geeks when we first saw this is Hugh Jackman and this is him in the X-Men uniform. We were like, what is this? Who is this tool?
He's too tall. That hair is never going to look good. Exactly. Like, don't do the hair, guys.
Right.
You don't have to do the hair. Like, by X-Men Origins Wolverine, they had figured out, like, oh, we don't have to put the hair? Okay, great.
Right.
Because what a bad idea.
Exactly. But I remember walking away from the first X-Men being like, oh, no, they were absolutely right in casting him.
He's awesome.
Yeah, and he really was the breakout star of that movie. Yeah. Him and Ian McKellen, I think, were the two best choices.
Yes, I agree. I think Patrick Stewart, and I mean this in a good way, was the obvious choice. Yeah. Had they gone with anyone else, he'd be like, well,
and he's fine. He's good. Yeah, he is. But good. Ian McKellen is inspired, and Hugh Jackman was a good find.
Ian McKellen is wonderful.
Yeah. I'm not crazy about anybody else until you get to the second one, and I like Alan Cumming obviously a lot as Nightcrawler.
He's wonderful,
and I like James Marsden as an actor, but Cyclops has never given much to do. I'm not a Famke Janssen fan, so I'm not crazy about her.
Cyclops is tough, I think, because I think, you know, and I haven't read nearly as much X-Men as probably either one of you. But I think he's pretty vanilla from what I read.
His job is in the X-Men is.
Right. And so of course they have to like make this love triangle to try and make him interesting. But and I mean I know that exists in the comic too, but it was like, guys, come on. Mm-hmm.
I thought Halle Berry's performance was inspired.
Really, really good. Really good.
I mean, I was watching the poster. I saw the poster the other day.
Yeah.
And I saw the like she's like top billing, and it's like her and Hugh Jackman. I was like,
she was the biggest star.
You know? I don't remember her even saying anything.
Yeah. Oh, you don't? Do you know what happens to a toad that gets hit by lightning?
That's the worst line in that movie. Of course,
I mean, I can't believe that line exists. And then, I hear that line, right? What do you think the follow up is?
The same thing that happens to
everybody. No. But like, if you were watching that movie in 2000, and she says,
"Oh, you know laughter."
Do you know what happens to a toad that gets hit by lightning? What do you fill in the next line as?
Oh,
No one?
No.
He croaks? Horrible. Horrible, right? But isn't it at least a little more clever than the same thing that happens to everything else? What is that? I don't want a character to say he croaks. I roll my eyes. But the same thing that happens to everyone else? Are you kidding?
Maybe this isn't the time to bring this up. I'm not saying that is Academy Award winning writing at all. But that line gets picked on by everyone. I don't under... It's not good.
Nails on a chalkboard.
It's not good. It's not good. But I do not understand why... Like,
for real?
Yeah, the venom that you two and everyone else...
That's one of the stupidest lines I've ever heard.
It's not good. I'm not saying it's good, but I don't... Okay. I feel like there's way worse dialogue in movies, but okay, I'm clearly wrong.
You have a character who didn't say anything all movie, and this is what she said.
I'm sure there are worse lines in movies. I'm not saying it's great at all. Really, like, please don't think I am, but I don't. But I'm the only person alive that doesn't have that reaction that you two have toward that line.
It's just so stupid and lazy. Get on the train, you know. There are lots of bad lines in lots of movies, I understand, but it stands out in that movie because there aren't a ton of horrible lines in that movie, and then all of a sudden, I mean, the whole finale of that movie, there's a lot of problems with the first X-Men. The effects are bad. The whole Statue of Liberty thing, okay, I don't know, but Sabretooth is a shitty villain. Toad is a shitty villain, you know, like, they're bad villains.
Sit next to him in a urinal.
Tyler Mane.
And X-Men, you know, except for Magneto, hasn't really figured out their villains either. And part of the problem is, it could be anybody. You just have to introduce, like, it's this guy with this power.
Yeah,
but then you are constantly having to introduce what people's powers are, you know?
Right.
Like, multiple man, who cares? All right, my pick for my favorite comic book movie of all time, obviously I think will be on everybody else's list. I don't know, Spider-Man 2.
That's my number one.
And the only reason that I prefer that to The Dark Knight, well, there's a couple of reasons. One, I have more affection for Spider-Man than Batman, but that's personal. I like that the Dark Knight takes everything totally seriously and exists in a real world. But at the same time, what I love about Spider-Man is that it exists in sort of a heightened comic book world, but that it's so character-driven and so character-based. It's got a great villain. The writing is great. The action sequences are great, with the exception of that train sequence with Mr. Kimball, are you all right? Like, that whole thing, I could do it. You dropped your mask, mister. That's horrible. That's the first Spider-Man when they're throwing shit. Like, you mess with one of us. You mess with all of us. No, get it out of the movie. The same thing that happens to everyone else. The stuff with Harry Osborn is, like, Shakespearean almost. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I saw the trailer, the shots of him pulling that knife out with Spider-Man unconscious on the couch, it's like, oh my god, what are we in for? And I will say this, Marvel for a little while had a great track record post, like, X-Men. And there were always these scenes that I could point to, like, here's why their movies are working. And in the first X-Men, it's the scene where they're driving Wolverine and Rogue, and she says, does it hurt when they come out? And he says, every time. And in the first Spider-Man, it's right before, spoilers for Spider-Man coming up, right before the Green Goblin dies, his last words are, don't tell Harry. And I love that this conflict between these two guys, superpowered guys in crazy suits, that this guy's last thought is his son. Mm-hmm. I don't want my son to know this about me. And that grounds it emotionally and character-wise in a way that most comic book movies don't. And Spider-Man 2 does it best of all, because spoilers for Spider-Man 2 coming up. The fact that this $200 million comic book movie, at the time, I think the biggest ever made, has the balls to end on the shot that it ends on, which is Mary Jane, who, you know, is now confessed her love for Spider-Man, and they're going to be together. But the movie, he's swinging, and we could go out in this high note, like, yay, he's Spider-Man, he's swinging through the city. And then it goes back to Mary Jane, who, Kirsten Dunst is not my favorite actress, and I don't like her for the most part as Mary Jane. I'm not crazy about her, but man, does she nail that look. Because it's just this look of concern, and that's the way the movie ends, and it's incredible.
That was a moment for me when I was like, oh, this movie is special.
Yes.
Okay, I could not agree more. That last shot just gives me goosebumps.
That says everything, right? That these are real people who are worried about each other, and there are real stakes involved, yep. You know?
And it not just for the one she loves, but for herself.
Right.
And
the part that kills me with the Mary Jane is when she first sees his face. And she's right, like, yes. Oh my god, yeah. You're...
Pete. She does have a great reaction shot.
Yeah, yeah, like, that's, yeah, yeah. It's like, oh my god. Right. Like, I love you so much right now, you right, know? And right. Like, that's, like... God, that movie nails everything. From the opening sequence with him delivering the pizzas is right. Just
even awesome. Just the fact to retell the events of the first movie sort of as a comic book, I love.
Yeah.
It really does. Alfred Molina is great as Dr. Octopus. He's an interesting villain. He's not, like, used too much. I love his I Will Not Die a Monster. Again, he has depth. And I still don't understand why he whips a car at Spider-Man if his goal is to keep him alive or whatever. Like, or at Peter Parker, rather, when they're sitting. Right. Like, I don't know. Seems counterintuitive to what you're trying to do, but whatever. But yeah, to me, that's the best superhero movie ever made, because it balances those two things so well. The sort of heightened, crazy comic book reality with characters that we care about, who are well written, who have, you know, real relationships with each other, and blah 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 blah.
Right.
It got everything right. Like, yeah. if you're a fan of the comic book, you're a fan of those movies. Like, yeah. I'd have to punch the fanboy in the face who came out of Spider-Man 2 and was like, hey, it's not like the comic. Really? Yeah. What comic are you reading?
Yeah, right.
You know?
Yeah, it definitely got the spirit of the comic book right. But again, like Iron Man, it appeals to people who could care less about the Spider-Man comic book, you know? That everybody can like Spider-Man 2. And I was always fascinated. There are still people who say the first one is better, and I...
Yeah, like members of the Howard Stern Show, but right. I'm with you. Spider-Man 2 is the better of the two movies. And I also think, like, just to comment on, like, what you were saying, I also get the feeling that, and yes, it does make a difference to me, that I feel like Sam Raimi understood and actually loves the material and loves Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Jon Favreau understands Iron Man and yeah. loves it. It's not some music video director
right.
who got hired to make it look slick. Like, right. you know, these are filmmakers and people involved that love the material and understand the material the way I love and understand the material. And I think I completely connect to that.
Yeah, because it definitely shows when the director has no interest, or, you know, it's just kind of a director for hire. We'll get to that
with the worst
yeah.
ones.
Yeah, right.
Well, and we've talked about that with horror movies. Honestly, yeah, yeah. With these reboots of franchises, right. like, it's the same thing.
Marvel, again, in their good movies, they've been very smart about hiring directors. Even yeah. Kenneth Branagh for Thor, when I heard that, I was like, that's a great choice. That I'm excited to see that. Now, the trailers have been wanting, and I don't know how the movie's going to be, but on paper, that makes sense to me. Joss Whedon for the Avengers, great idea, yeah. you know.
Darren Aronofsky for the Wolverine. Yeah, right,
but Bryan Singer and Sam Raimi yeah. and Ang Lee and Jon Favreau, I mean, they've made some good calls.
Yeah.
DC has, you know, Christopher Nolan. That's great.
Right. Yeah. I'm interested in Zack Snyder's Superman.
Oh, I am too, absolutely.
So I'm the loves... I love it. Zack Snyder's Superman is gonna be great. Yeah. I'm gonna plug something in right here.
Okay.
Before we go on to the worst stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. If you say you're listening to this podcast and you're like, I love superhero movies.
Yes.
Like, I cannot get enough superhero movies. I'll okay. watch the bad ones over and over.
I'll watch Steel. Yeah. I don't care.
Yeah.
I have no barometer.
My like little nugget that every time it's on TV I will watch it is yep. Sky High.
I love Sky High.
I'm a big fan of Sky High.
Love that
yeah.
movie.
Yeah.
It's so much fun.
Yeah.
It's got guys from Kids in the Hall.
It really is a movie for nerds. Like, it really yeah. pays off in all these different ways, whether it's Linda Carter as the principal or the guys from Kids in the Hall or Bruce Campbell playing the gym teacher mm-hmm. and Kurt Russell has all these great jokes, and it's just a ton of fun.
Yep.
I really like that movie. And that movie totally took me by surprise.
Oh,
like,
same with us. Same, yeah. yeah.
We went in, Erica and I went in, you know, it was one of those days where we saw like three movies and it worked out time-wise and it was about superheroes, but I had very low expectations and I was like, oh my gosh, I love that movie.
Right. Yeah, it was really fun. So if you haven't seen it, go out and see that movie.
Yeah, I mean, again, it was marketed as like a kid's movie.
Right.
And it's put out by Disney, so I think a lot of people didn't give it a chance, but it's great. As long as we're talking about real quick, I want to talk about a few comic book movies that I think are a little bit underrated, or superhero movies. Mystery Men, I already talked about. Rocketeer, you mentioned.
Yes.
I actually think The Phantom is actually really underrated. I think that's a misunderstood movie.
I think I've got to see it again, because yeah. I saw that one when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I don't think I got it.
People really write that. Have you seen it recently?
I have not, no.
Okay.
No.
People really write it off, but I think it's a lot of fun. I think it's goofy, but it knows exactly how goofy it is. And the key is Treat Williams' performance. Because he knows exactly the movie that he's in, and he has these great lines like, have you heard the exciting news? We're going to the Skull Cave, or like whatever, or it's not the Skull Cave, that's where the Phantom lives, whatever. Blade 2, I think, is great.
I wrote that, I'm like, Patrick's going to bring that up, so I'll...
Again, Marvel had this track record for a while of like, and actually I guess still has that track record. Decent first movie, Spider-Man, Blade, X-Men, sequel, great. Gets everything right. It has all the origin shit out of the way. X-Men 2, better. Spider-Man 2, better. Blade 2, better. And then the third movie is a terrible mess. Spider-Man 3, X-Men 3, Blade 3. Iron Man 2 broke that trend a little bit, because I think Iron Man 2
not as good
made
as
the mess a little early. I agree. Like, Iron Man 2 felt like Iron Man 3. Like, there's too much going on. They're trying to service too many things. But I think Blade 2 is really, really great. And then I'm going to talk about the most controversial, what I think is an underrated comic movie, and this is probably on both of your guys' worst of list.
I was waiting for this.
Yeah. Is specifically the director's cut of Daredevil.
Okay. Which in all fairness, I've not seen the director's
right.
cut.
It is not on my worst list.
It's not on
okay.
mine either.
Okay. It ends up on almost every worst list for superhero movies, and that's fine. People are like, oh, Ben Affleck, he sucks. And there's a lot of problems with Daredevil. The leather costume, Colin Farrell will never be good in that movie ever. I didn't hate the movie when I saw it. you know, it was really the first kind of superhero movie to come out post Spider-Man. So everybody was sort of riding that high, like, well, let's go see this movie. And then a lot of people really didn't like it. There's bad music choices. There's a lot of things wrong with it. The director's cut fixes a lot of those issues by making the action scenes darker and by adding in way more of Matt Murdock's stuff. There's a whole case that he's trying throughout the movie. So you get the sense that, oh, he's two people, you know, the way that we've talked about Iron Man works because of the duality and Spider-Man works because of the duality in Batman. The director's cut of Daredevil adds in a lot more of that stuff. So you get to see him as a lawyer defending the helpless in Hell's Kitchen while at the same time, you know, kicking ass as Daredevil. A lot of the problems are still there. But I think it's a much better movie, and I think it's unfair. I'm not even saying it's a good movie. I just think it does not deserve nearly the amount of hatred that it gets.
I think that you hit it on the head, though, when you said that it came out on a high. Like, everybody was like, wow, these two, we didn't see these two coming, and they're great. Wow, this one really wasn't as good as I wanted it to be.
Right.
And, yeah, there's a lot of problems with it, but I think my issue with it is I watched it, and I was kind of done with it afterwards. Yeah. Like, I didn't really care.
Yeah, I think I'm the same boat.
Yeah. Let's shoehorn in one other thing, because when we came up with this idea for a podcast, we said, well, let's do specifically comic book superheroes. But, Mike, would you say that there is a superhero movie that you love that isn't based on a comic book?
I would, and that would be... I was going to make a joke, and then I panicked. I saw The Crow, and I'm like, no, that's based on a comic book. That would be Unbreakable.
Yes.
Would be one of my favorite comic book movies that's not actually based on a comic book. That's when M. Night Shyamalan wasn't what we have now, when he really showed a lot of promise there for a minute. It is a movie that I really, really... love. It's very, I think, unlike a lot of superhero movies, it's very slow.
Too slow for a lot of people.
Yeah, maybe, but I think great performances. Especially, I'm a big Bruce Willis fan. I think he's wonderful in it. I can't remember his son's name, the boy.
Yeah.
I think he's great. I won't talk real long about it, but what I really responded to in that movie was a relationship between the father and the son. And spoilers, you find out Bruce Willis has, you know, superpowers,
right?
I guess. And there's a scene after he sort of discovers these powers and uses them to defeat these bad guys. There is a headline in a newspaper about this, you know, mysterious superhero who thwarted these bad guys, and he's Bruce Willis is sitting with his son at the breakfast table, and mother is making breakfast, and Bruce Willis takes the paper and just slides it across and shows his son. And that boy, again, I'm sorry, I don't remember the actor's name, he sees that headline, just looks up at his dad and starts crying. And then Bruce Willis is about to cry, and he just holds his finger up to his lips and tells him, like, shh. And, like, that moment alone is one of my, and not just one of my favorite moments in a superhero movie. That might be one of my favorite moments in any movie. I don't know why, but, like, you can tell, like, I'm just choked up thinking about it now. Like, I absolutely love that moment. I love that movie. I think it's a really cool, you don't get the superhero and versus the bad guy until the very end, but it's, you know, the journey leading up to it, I think, is fascinating. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I'm sorry, I'm not being real articulate at this point, but...
No, I like that movie a real lot, and it puts a lot of people off, because it is slow, because they feel like it's pretentious. And unfortunately, you know, the marketing was such... Again, he's coming off The Sixth Sense, which everyone saw and everyone loved. And the marketing was very cryptic. It was just the scene talking about him on the train and surviving an accident, and it's called Unbreakable, and nobody knows what it's called, but we love The Sixth Sense, so we come out in droves to see it. And that was not the movie that most people... What? It's about superheroes? It's about comic books? This is stupid, you know?
Right.
I really like it, again, because for his first few movies, he always treated these sort of otherworldly subjects very realistically. What would it really be like if there were ghosts? What would it really be like if a guy was a superhero? What would it really be like if aliens invaded? And then he goes off the tracks, obviously. And I like Unbreakable a lot. What if there was a
person in the pool?
What if there was a guy who could bend air? But, like, only one of them. There's only one of these guys. My issue with Unbreakable is the same issue that everybody else has, which is that it's a movie without a third act. That instead of having a third act, it turns into an episode of Cops at the end, and we get like a freeze frame and text.
Well, right, yes.
That is, I think, I mean, it doesn't cripple the movie, but it's hard for me to just unabashedly love that movie because he really, really blows the end.
Yeah.
Really blows it.
I agree. But I think everything leading up to that moment is really wonderful.
Yeah. I think even the reveal, like, oh, you're my enemy, I'm fine with all that. Yeah. And even if that's how the movie ends, it's fine. But then it freezes on Bruce Willis, and it's like, the police apprehended this. Yeah. I'm fine not knowing. I'm fine thinking that you're setting me up for a sequel, even if it never comes.
Right.
That's fine, but that is a mess of an ending.